But remember, we're always talking about humans, so mistakes will happen.
You are listening to the Alzheimer's Podcast with Mike Good of Togetherness, your number one resource for practical tips and insights, empowering you and your family to live well with Alzheimer's. Hello, I'm Mike Good of Togetherness. Welcome to episode 52 of the Alzheimer's Podcast, where my goal is always to empower you to maintain a positive experience, reduce and eliminate the need for medications, and make your time together with those you care for the best it can be. Death isn't a topic most of us are comfortable with discussing. However, it's an inevitable outcome of life for all of us. But talking about death and planning for it can make what might be otherwise a bad death a good death. So Christy, our topic today of creating a good death. I'm very intrigued, and as I've mentioned to you before, I'm not very experienced with death. I guess I've been fortunate so far in my life. But you mentioned to me that you've actually been around it quite a bit by choice, even.
Yes, I've had the privilege of sitting with 23 people as they passed, and I liken it to birth in the sense that people talk about that experience and how amazing it is to be present for that, and death is, of course, the bookend for that, and both are very special experiences. Now, that said, I understand it's not for everyone.
Right.
Some people would not like to be present at a birth, and some people are not okay with being present at a death. But for our listeners that are interested in what they can do to create a good death for their loved one, and maybe have kind of started thinking about that a little bit, I think this is an important topic.
I absolutely agree, and know, as I said, know very little about it, but having sat with 23 people, that's quite a, I don't know what the word is I want to use here. That's just, and that was all by choice. I mean, can you explain to us how you got into that position of sitting with the 23 people? Was it part of a hospice program? Was it something through your being part of the memory care community you used to manage, or?
Right. So, typically people, I mean, not typically, just as a rule, if we're born, we die. That happens.
Right.
And I just, it was through work where I first got involved with doing that when I was working in memory care. And then, of course, I've done it since, having my own company also, and a couple of family members as well. And I just noticed, first of all, that families didn't realize that it could be a good death, that was even a possibility. And I think it's because when we love someone who has dementia, there's so much sadness and loss that happens along the way. It just, everything kind of has almost like a black cloud over it. And oftentimes that's how we think of death also. And I think when we look at it more holistically, like, of course we would not choose this condition for anybody we love, but they do have it and they are going to die, which was going to happen no matter what. So how can we make it an experience that we feel good about? Because I hate hearing families tell me they have regrets. That's the worst thing for me. So how can we help our person it's that final act of assisting and supporting our person as they leave this life. How can we make it as good as possible? And there are lots of ways to do that. So you think about, well, I'll tell a story. I was present for a death which was not good. And it was very traumatic. and you take that experience versus when you actually have some planning behind it and think about, you know, what would I like this to look like? What would really honor my person? Then you not only feel more in control of something that really essentially is an uncontrollable experience, but you're able to guide it and create an experience that you actually can feel proud of, that you put the effort into it and made it as good as it could be, versus feeling out of control and kind of knocked upside the head by life all over again, like we often do when we find out about, you know, that our person has dementia in the first place.
Right. I, now that you put it that way, I can understand how you can say a good death. At first, I was like, oh, those two words just don't even go together, right? and then I was trying to think about, well, what would that be? And for me, all I could really come up was, you know, having a loved one be pain-free with family around them. But there must be, you used the word holistic, so there must be there are other things along with those probably that you would consider being part of a good death.
Yeah. So, you know, just going back again as a point of comparison to what I consider the bad death I was present at, versus many of the good deaths, which has been the vast majority of my experience. Do you want your person to die in the hospital or at home? And home is wherever they live. So if they live in a memory care community or they live in your home, whatever it is, you know, dying in their own bed versus being in a hospital. And a lot of times we have the idea of a hospital as a place where people go to get well. But the truth is, people often go to the hospital to die because we're unaware that that's sort of what's imminent, because as a society generally, we're not super comfortable talking about death, and it can really make us feel very uncomfortable, and it's a topic a lot of people just don't want to think about. And as a result, we can end up calling 911 when there's really nothing else that can be done for our person other than making them comfortable, which I do not mean in any way to minimize making them comfortable, because that is a huge thing that we can do. But in a hospital setting, the staff there is trained to fix it, right? Whatever it might be. So they will start doing a lot of interventions that may not be useful, may just prolong the situation and not create a lot of benefit. And so when we kind of start looking at it that way and thinking about how we just kind of want that whole end of life piece to look, then I just think it's a useful exercise in life. A lot of times when you are clear on what you don't want, what you do want sort of magically, that's what I was thinking. Right. So
that makes sense.
Yeah. In the sense of a good death, like what I consider a good death and what I've seen many families embrace as part of a good death is having a hospice team involved, because there's that extra TLC, not only for your person, but for you, for the whole family. Let's say it is in your person's own bed. You can, you know, get into bed with them and hug them and hold them. You can have the, you know, chair set up around so, you know, family can be in there. Music playing, something, you know, that resonates with your person, because people are able to hear all the way through to their last breath. They can certainly feel our energy. So, you know, dying actually takes a lot of energy. So when we're able to lend our energy to that effort, you know, that's a really loving thing to do, to just be there supportively. Aromatherapy, you know, a lot of these things, for for people who have given birth might be hearing this and going, oh, well, yeah, this is sounding a little bit like my birth plan. And so it is, again, just that bookend of thinking about what that plan should look like for the end of your person's life.
Christy, do you find that families of who have loved ones with dementia have come to an acceptance that death is imminent, or is there still, do most families struggle with the denial and the acceptance of it?
I think in my experience, most families that I work with have accepted it. And I think, you know, part of that may be the fact that we're working together, because I always want to make sure that my client families are not surprised to the extent possible.
Right.
So, you know, sometimes things happen and you just did not think that was the timeline. But I always, you know, I don't like nasty surprises in life. I don't think anybody does. So, but that said, I always tell this story about in my own family. You know, my grandma had Alzheimer's disease for 19 years. She lived with my parents for the last 5 years of her life. My mom took wonderful care of her. And my aunt said to me 3 days before death, before my grandma's death, you know, I don't think grandma's going to get better.
Right.
And and my grandma died 6 months to the day that she'd been on hospice. So, you know, there shouldn't have been any surprise whatsoever. My mom was very inclusive and open, but my aunt just couldn't, she struggled the whole time.
Right. And, you know, and the reason I asked that was because I imagine you have to have that acceptance to really be able to think about having a good death and putting together, I guess you call it a death plan. You called it a birth plan. So I say a death plan.
Mm-hmm.
Now you got me thinking, okay, so the primary care partner and team has accepted, but a lot of family members start coming in and coming out of the woodwork, right, probably, that haven't been around and haven't accepted it. So are there ways that the care team can help these family members accept it, and so that they don't turn a good death into a bad death? Does that make sense?
That absolutely makes sense. So one of the things, and this was for those who downloaded the holiday guide that we had, you know, managing the holidays, has that email template in it of kind of, you know, walking through your family through, like, these are the changes that we've experienced, and this is what I need you to do, and this is why, and this is the bad thing that's going to happen if you don't, you know, get with the program. And I'm kind of, you know, shorthanding that, but that email template has an example of an email, and it has the rationale for why you say certain things, or why it is the way that it is. So you can set those expectations before people show up. And you can just imagine how horrible it would be for somebody who hasn't seen your person in, let's say, 6 months, and then they've had this decline. You know,
right.
The kind thing to do is to prepare them for that. Sometimes we just don't know, though. Like, it is that your person has dementia, but then maybe something else, some other condition as well, and that other condition is the thing, you know, that takes over, and you weren't anticipating this happening as quickly as possible. So I think, you know, when we're in a stressful situation, which is how we tend to experience death, we do the best that we can at the time. And so I think that it's really important that families keep that in mind, because if you can send an email, you know, a mass email to people saying you're welcome or you're not welcome, or it's okay to put this on Facebook, or I will strangle anybody who puts this on Facebook, you know, whatever,
right.
Wherever you fall on that, if you can make those expectations clear, then you have a much better chance of everybody being on the same page and having that good experience there at the end of life, versus if everybody's kind of caught off guard and can turn into sort of a Wild West environment. But if you do have the opportunity to kind of put that information out there to people. That's where you want to set those expectations. And don't feel bad about setting expectations. You know, this is your person. So you've been looking out for them all this time. And this is the final way that you're able to do that. So, you know, make it about your person, of course. But if there's somebody in your family that is just a super negative Nelly or inappropriate or, you know, whatever, we all kind of have a black sheep in our family, right? Then it's okay to set that boundary and just be like, no, that's not going to work. Sorry. Now, that said, of course, we want to take into consideration that person's relationship with your person, right? So if it's a cousin that you just can't stand, but it's always been super close with grandma, then obviously you don't have to stay in the room when that cousin's in there with grandma, but it's an important relationship and they both deserve to be able to have that final time together. And then if your person is in a care community, remember that you have the staff there too. So they want to help you. And often they will kind of follow your lead. I would love to say that, you know, memory care communities as a whole have completely figured this out. But remember, we're always talking about humans. So mistakes will happen. And depending on that particular team's level of experience with death, you know, again, some people are really comfortable with it, like I am, and some people are not. But typically what will happen is they will approach you and say, is there anything that we can do for you? And usually you're going to be in a daze and say, no, we're fine. And they will bring you a cart with snacks and beverages anyway, and kind of just unobtrusively peek their head in the door every couple of hours and make sure that you're okay. And of course, they're going to check your person too and assist in turning so that there's no skin breakdown and make sure that their physical needs are met also. But if you are, you know, like, we don't want anybody in here, we got this, then they're going to respect that. But they are there to support you. And if that includes kind of monitoring visitors, because you're not able to be there 24/7, then that's okay too. They're happy to do that. Just, you know, you want to communicate that with them.
And this could be for days or weeks even, right?
Well, so it depends on kind of where somebody is in the process.
Right.
Like I was saying with my one grandma, she was on hospice for 6 months to the day. And so it was definitely anticipated, but we didn't know when that was going to happen. So we can see that somebody is in that final phase. If they have Alzheimer's disease, for example, we can see when they're in that final phase. Sometimes people will, like I said, there will be a different condition that kind of supersedes that, and that's what is causing the rapid decline and ultimately ending in death. So we can't say, and you know, I always say the crystal ball's in the shop, darn it. So right. We can't say exactly, but typically people with a chronic condition will, and that are in that end phase of their life, then they will transition, is what it's called, into active dying. And once that active dying process starts, that's typically, I mean, about 72 hours. And I say typically, and you know, as soon as I say typically, then somebody's going to say, well, no, I've never seen it go past 48, or somebody goes, well, in my family it was 96. So yes, again, the crystal ball's in the shop, but in my experience, what I've seen happen is families really, they're like, it is so emotionally taxing that they say, gosh, how much longer do you think it's going to be? And it's, you know, it's one of those things where we just really can't tell, and it will look like it's imminent and go another 24 or 48 hours.
Right.
So we don't know. So sometimes it seems that our person is waiting for a certain family member to show up, or somebody that they're very close to that they kind of want to say goodbye to. And that doesn't mean that they're going to sit up and make eye contact and conversation all of a sudden. It just means that they are aware of the presences around them in a subconscious kind of a way, or you could say on a soul level. And then once that person has shown up, or once a certain person has given permission, then that's it, and they pass peacefully.
So unless you're a family member who's like yourself, has done this professionally and been alongside people who have died, it's a whole new experience for you. So I can see extreme value in having someone such as yourself there, as well as the hospice team, because of just understanding that what to expect and the emotional roller coaster that they must be going through. And I would guess I would never have thought about having professionals in the house for that purpose. But again, I haven't been around death much. So,
yeah, there are actually professionals called death doulas. And again, that's just like when you're giving birth, you may do it in the hospital with just a doctor, or you may choose to do a home birth with a midwife and a doula, or you can have a midwife and a doula in the hospital, whatever you choose. Same principle. And so a doula is like a coach, not like your birthing coach, right? But an additional support person that is just kind of providing a ton of support. And so you can also have a death doula. Okay. That's an actual thing. And then of course, you know, a hospice team typically is just absolutely amazing, but it's important to know, most often they're not right there, at least not in the types of situations that I'm talking about. I have not seen a hospice team typically present during, you know, hours.
Right.
Whereas a doula will be.
Well, it sounds like you have, maybe not by title, but you've acted in you've actually been a death doula for many families. You may not yourself that, but it sounds like
I would hope I could live up to the amazing work that they do.
Right.
I think, you know, in the situations where I've been involved, and of course they've all been variable, but like I said, sometimes I've been a family member, but as a professional, sometimes I've been the one that says, you know, sure, of course you can step out, and, you know, I'll sit here while you go to the bathroom or go get something to eat or go home and take a shower or get a few hours sleep or whatever. And that's an important thing for families to know, is that your person doesn't always want you present when they pass. So what I've observed over the years is that typically, and again, as soon as you say typically, somebody has a different story, right?
Right, of course.
But what I've observed is that spouses are typically okay with one another being present, and that can be very helpful. And if an adult child says to, let's say, a father, "Don't worry about mom, I'm always going to make sure she's okay," you can see like an easing of body posture, like, ah, okay, that, you know, tick that off my list. But parents typically do not want their adult kids around when they die. Sometimes it's okay, I'd say at least 50% of the time, the family has been sitting there for hours and hours and hours and hours and hours and hours and days, you know, and then they walk out to get something to eat or to consult with somebody on the staff, and the person passes.
Wow.
So I don't know if it's like that final act of being a parent and, you know, protecting your kid, or what it is. And then some people, you know, too, it's just, there's that one particular person. And so I take the view of whoever's supposed to be there is there. And I think it's so important. And I talk about this as much as I can, because I think it's so important for families to know that you haven't done anything wrong or bad or to feel bad about if you're not in the room when it happens. That's quite common. So it's not like you were a horrible, whatever your title is, you know, daughter-in-law, just because you stepped out. That's not the case. A lot of times people wait for that to happen and then they pass.
To me, what I'm thinking is death is not just that moment in time where a person stops breathing, but it's that process, right? And so if the daughter was there in this example for, you know, a majority or a lot of the time and then happened to step out, I mean, she was there for that, for the death process, and should be very happy and feel good about herself for that, I would hope.
I would hope too, but of course, when we're talking about human emotions, right, they get complex, right, and complicated pretty quickly.
Exactly. But yeah. So, well, it's great to know that, you know, again, our care partners, you know, we have a choice whether to have a good death or a bad death. And it sounds like, you know, that's not just for the person who's passing, but also for the family and everyone around to experience it, in a good way. So I'm happy that you're sharing that with us to help us all know that. It's important.
I think it is too. I think, you know, it's really hard to envision something when you don't know it's a possibility. But once you do know it's a possibility, your imagination can kind of take over and you can start thinking more about, well, what would I like this to look like? What would really honor my person? And then that's when you're moving into that good death territory.
So, Christy, I just want to tell our listeners out there that if you want to know more about this topic, please feel free to reach out to Christy at dementiasherpa.com and, you know, get on her newsletter, send her an email. I'm sure she'd be very happy to answer your questions. And I will also provide any links that we come up with on the show notes. All right. Well, Christy, I thank you for our conversation today, and I look forward to talking with you next week when we're going to talk about things no one tells you about end of life.
Perfect.
All right. Well, bye now.
Bye.
You've been listening to The Alzheimer's Podcast with Mike Good of Togetherness. For more information and to get the resources mentioned in this episode, visit togetherness.com/podcast.